This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I recently found out that you can see a personal dietitian covered by insurance. There's this platform called Nourish that will match you with a dietitian based on whatever your concerns are, whether that's weight loss, eating disorders, autoimmune conditions, or something else. They're actually a network with major insurance providers, so most patients pay $0 out of pocket. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
How about it? It's time for David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. Joins me now via the phone line. David, how's it going, brother?
Hey, man. It's going pretty well. Going pretty well. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Did you enjoy your weekend, the Masters, all that?
Oh, my gosh, Gabe. I was hooked yesterday. I have not been that captivated by a sporting event in a long time. And you're speaking to somebody who was just courtside for the Final Four. So it was just incredible. I've loved every second of it. On the one hand, I felt bad that Rory had to make it so dramatic. But on the other hand, it was the most fitting way for him to get that green jacket, because that final round was so emblematic of everything that he's gone through for the past 11 years. It would have been there was no other way for him to do it, but then to put us through all of that before he finally got it done.
That was the most up and down round of golf ever, though, too. I mean, he was up by 5 strokes at one point at 14 under, Rory. And like, he had some great shots, the one on 15, sort of like Tiger back in the day. Then he misses the putt on 18 to have the playoff. He gets a bogey there to force it with Justin Rose. He was so up and down, it was ridiculous. I mean, he hit some of the best shots of his career and some of the worst shots of his career, you know, back to back.
It was the Rory experience. That was it. Some of the shots he hit, bending them around trees, going up over the trees, insane. He couldn't make a putt to save his life, and then he finally gave himself too short of a putt to miss,
right?
Which honestly is what he had to do. So on the one hand, I felt bad for Justin Rose, but like, man, what a classy, like,
I don't feel bad at all for Justin Rose. I got to be honest with you. I don't feel bad. I needed for the sake of golf conversation for Rory to get the Grand Slam so we can stop discussing it every single year around this time when we play the Masters.
And then Nance just hit him in the feels with the last question inside Butler Cabin. Got Rory crying, got me crying. I think everybody was almost crying, if not crying. It was a peak Masters Sunday. People are like, yeah, I saw Jeffrey. He still puts 2019 with Tiger ahead of that one. And I get it. Like, that one was super significant, but the drama, the career Grand Slam getting clinched for the first time in a quarter century in that fashion, I don't know. That one might be my favorite that I've ever watched.
Yep, for sure. I was captivated the entire time. Now, also what captivates me, and I just got done discussing it, Nico Amleava. We tried to make sense of it on Friday before he officially got into the transfer portal, but Tennessee plays their spring game, and here he is in the transfer portal. After an NIL dispute where he wanted basically what's being reported is $1.5 million more dollars, $2.5 million to about $4 million. This is insane. This is wild to me. We talked about his production and the bargaining chips he actually had when he stepped up to ask for $4 million. I still don't feel any differently about that. I felt like $2.5 million based on what he did last year was more than enough. I don't even know if he lived up to that in his freshman year, his redshirt freshman year. But here we are. He's in the transfer portal. He's going to try to find that money elsewhere.
Yeah, right. Well, it's going to be fascinating, won't it, Gabe, to see if he can get that number, see if he can get that number at another school. To also just see how it plays out for Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee fans are feeling pretty good right now. Josh Heupel stood on business, to steal a phrase from Eli Drinkwitz. He stood on business, and in the process, probably saved his program way more than $1.5 million, because I think the point worth making here is if he gives that $1.5 million more to Nico, then every other player on that roster is walking into Josh Heupel's office with their palm open and saying, where's mine? You know, and so he made a stand that probably saved his program a ton of money, well above and beyond just what he would have had to pay Nico. But now he's got to go and figure out an answer, figure out a solution. And we'll see how this week plays out. I mean, right now, as we speak, you know, Gio Lopez, a really talented quarterback from South Alabama, a lefty with a little wiggle to his game. He's getting in the transfer portal. He won't be the last one over the next week to do that. Does Tennessee go hard after one of those guys, or do they go into next season standing pat with a true freshman and a redshirt freshman? I can't imagine that's what they're going to do. But if they do get somebody from the portal, I mean, how does this thing play out? I mean, there's a real chance that all these good vibes right now sort of dissipate in the fall if you're Tennessee and you don't have a strong answer at that position.
Yeah, but Nico, based on the reports I'm reading, like UCLA, North Carolina, and Tulane he's been tied to, you ain't getting a $4 million payday at any one of those places, are you? Am I mistaken on that? Maybe UCLA, but I doubt that either.
Well, Tennessee cut his legs out from underneath him by moving on. I mean, they devoured his leverage, because you got leverage when you're sitting on a $2.5 million salary. You lose that leverage when you don't have it anymore and you're in the portal negotiating from scratch. So, I mean, I'm of the opinion he'll be lucky to get what he was making at Tennessee with his new stop. And then, oh yeah, by the way, you got to learn a new offense. You got to mesh with a new group of receivers. You got to get to know a new coaching staff, a new town. You got to move into a new apartment and all those sorts of things. And so, how does this play out for him, man? If those are your options, one, you're going to be on a team that's not competing for a college football playoff spot, right? So that you lose a little bit of the luster there. Even if you can recoup or come close to what you were hoping to make, what does it do for your NFL draft stock, right? I mean, you would think maybe playing for Bill Belichick, like there's some potential there, but we've never seen that guy as a college football head coach before, so we don't know what that's going to look like. And if it's UCLA, you're talking about a team that might not even make a bowl game. And then Tulane, you serious? You're going to go from Tennessee to the group of five? I mean, more power to you, I guess, but you know, that's a rough look.
Yeah. Can we revisit, is it fair to revisit the conversation we had about agents and advice on last Wednesday? Obviously I was talking about, you know, more oversight of those guys, and I was more talking about tampering with that conversation. But I think, you know, we can tie those two conversations together, because it feels like bad advice was just given out to Nico Iamaleava, and it may come from his dad, but also you have to get some from your agency to be able to make a move like this, to have the gumption to make a move like this. It just feels like bad advice has been given out daily in college athletics.
Yeah, no doubt. In this situation, it does feel like the father had way too much influence here. And the point I've made is that dad is just sitting there counting the money. Dad's not the one who's got to learn a new playbook and learn a new scheme and learn a new system and learn the new coaches and the new receivers and do it in a new town on relatively short order. I mean, Nico's going to be showing up wherever he's going in the summer. He's going to get about, 15, 20 practices before his first game. And then it's showtime. Dad's not the one who has to deal with the repercussions of that. He's the one sitting there counting the money. And so it's easy to do that when money is all you care about. But if you care about the well-being of your player, or in this case, your child, you're gonna approach the situation a little differently. And I can't help but think that Papa Iamaleava might look back at this thing in 6 months and say, "Man, I might have misled my child here." I mean, we'll see how it plays out. But this is an uncomfortable situation for both Nico and for Tennessee. There's a chance here that neither side wins. There's a chance here that Tennessee goes from the college football playoff to 8 wins, partly because there's a drop-off in quarterback play. On the same hand, there's a chance that Nico goes from being the starting quarterback for a college football playoff team to trudging along in relative anonymity for a program that's not nearly as visible, making maybe the same amount of money. And then, yeah, what have you done to your draft stock? How many difficult questions have you made yourself? Are you now going to have to answer because of the situation you put yourself in when you're going through the draft process, be that in a year, 2 years, or even 3 years? So it's I don't know that either side's a clear winner now, but if anyone is feeling good about themselves or better than they were a week ago, it's Tennessee, because they stood on business. A lot still got to play out for this to be declared a victory for the Vols. But, you know, at least at the moment, they're kind of being celebrated and lauded for putting a stop to a situation that I think a lot of us are sort of sick of in college sports.
It's narrative season with the story in general. But, like, two narratives that I've sort of toggled between is sort of the mindset of the player nowadays, where I don't think they understand contract negotiations. And why should they? They're 20 years old. They're 18 to 23 years old. They're too young to really understand exactly what their worth is and how contract negotiations are going to go. And I think the Nico example is a good example of that. But it's the mindset of the player versus the lack of oversight and lack of structure in college football. What is this story more about to you when you're picking between those two sort of narratives that have been created?
Well, I think it's about the player misreading the situation. And we reached a boiling point here to where it felt like the players could sort of hold the program hostage. And now all of a sudden, for the first time, at least in the public eye, we're seeing a program strike back. And you know, the phrase I mentioned earlier is cutting his legs out from beneath him and removing his leverage. Kind of a shocking move to see a program take that drastic of a step, especially with somebody who they invested so much in. But now, does that embolden other programs to do the same thing and just cut bait with a guy and just say, you know what, like, thanks for all your hard work, but we're not going to deal with this? Because if that's you know, if there's a precedent that's been set here, we could start to see more of that. And it does happen. It's happened multiple times. Where a player has asked for more money than a program thinks they're worth. The program doesn't give them that. Then they go into the portal. You know, we don't know exactly how it's worked out for everybody because we don't know the exact specifics of those situations. But here with Nico, everybody's going to be watching to see how it plays out. It's going to be one of the biggest storylines of the 2025 football season. Who wins the Nico Iamaleava Tennessee divorce, right? And so, as of now, it sure looks like a moment of a player and a family sort of overplaying their hand a little bit. And so that's to me the biggest takeaway here is man, like they really went for it and it might have backfired.
And we're getting to a point with some of these guys, some of these five stars, these big recruits, these big names, where it just feels like nothing's enough. Like when Nico signed that deal with Tennessee, it was, correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the biggest, if not the biggest NIL deals in the history of college football. And that didn't end up being enough. What is enough? Like, I know they gave that $4 million ballpark, but even if you gave him that $4 million, what's saying he's not going to go back to the negotiating table this offseason and ask for $6.5 million, $7 million? I mean, just never enough, and it's insane to think about.
No, it is. Yeah, and at some point it becomes a cancer in your program and in your locker room if you've got your star player continually doing this. And you made the point the other day when we were talking, and it's so apt and worth repeating. If you or I were to go ask for a raise, we'd need to bring some results with us. We'd need to bring the proof of our value to justify that raise.
Sure.
Well, Nico Iamaleava was a good game manager last season. He helped Tennessee get to the playoff, but in no way was he responsible for Tennessee reaching the playoff. It was that defense. It was that running game. It was the offensive line and their ability to open up holes for Dylan Sampson that paved the way for them to reach the college football playoff. Nico Iamaleava was a Joe Milton caliber quarterback. I don't see anybody in Knoxville who would have said, yeah, Joe Milton was worth $4 million. You know, what was Hendon Hooker making, for crying out loud? I bet it wasn't even close to what Nico made this past season. And now he wants a raise? Where's the performance to justify that? It's not there. And so it's no different than any other line of work. And, you know, the sad reality is this underscores the fact that it's a business now. And not only is it a business, it's a business that has no regulation, unlike the NFL, unlike the NBA, MLB, you name it. There is no regulation. There is no collective bargaining. These guys, there's nothing binding about the agreements that they sign. And this feels like a tipping point. Will it actually lead to Congress figuring it out? Kind of doubt it. Will it lead to university presidents telling the NCAA, you know what, I think we're ready to have the conversation about these guys being employees? No, I don't think it will. But it just underscores people say unsustainable. I don't know, like, if that's the right word, because of this reason, people are probably still going to watch, right? Until I see diminishing TV ratings, until I see Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, until I see them struggling to put butts in seats at a serious level, like, then I don't know that you can really say it's unsustainable. But where the trickle down comes is throughout your athletic department, staff, throughout the non-revenue sports. How sustainable is it for them when football needs every last dime?
And have you seen, curiously, have you looked back at the 2023 247 top eight quarterback recruits?
Well, David Ubben put that out, man. It kind of blew me away. Arch Manning, right?
He's the only one. So yeah. Nico Amalaiava gone from Tennessee. Dante Moore is gone from UCLA. Jackson Arnold went from OU to Auburn. Malachi Nelson, that's one of the scariest stories for a lot of these guys. From SC to Boise State, didn't start there, goes to UTEP. Jaden Rashada, I don't even know if he's tied to anybody right now, but he was with Georgia last. Aiden Childs goes from Oregon State to Michigan State, and Austin Mack, of course, from Washington to Alabama. And I understand, like, Aiden Childs and Austin Mack a little bit different. They're following the coach that recruited them ultimately. But this is just – this is going to be normal going forward where –
yeah,
you're just – even, like, Arch Manning's an outlier there. He sat behind a guy for 2 years and still didn't leave because he sort of knew what he wanted when he came out. A lot of these guys don't exactly know what they want when they're coming out of high school.
Well, Arch Manning is playing the long game. He's saying, I'm going to go to the NFL. There's no sense
I don't necessarily need a bunch of money, NIL dollars in my pocket.
It also helps that he comes from a family of money, too. Like, let's say that. Like, that's obviously a difference between Arch Manning and some of these other players, is that he's not looking at this and thinking, my family's future depends on me squeezing every last dime out of my college football career. Maybe for some of these players, that's the case. It's like, this is my one chance, potentially, to change my family's legacy. And so that's an element of it, too. And we can't make all the players out to be bad guys for trying to maximize their value.
Absolutely not.
But just like in every business, you got to understand what your value is, and you got to understand what you're worth, and then you also have to perform in order to justify that. And so, yeah, it's crazy, man. It's you know, everybody, you know, around Tennessee right now is kind of pointing to the future, and like, look, we got Faison Brandon committed. He's a top quarterback prospect in the class of 2026. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? Like, what are the chances that guy ever even throws a pass for you? I mean, in this era, I mean, just 50-50 maybe that guy stays committed. One. Then sits behind a guy for a year, 2 years, whatever it is, and then ultimately becomes your starting quarterback without transferring or going elsewhere or whatever the situation may be. I mean, it's sort of what we've seen in college basketball. It almost just renders high school recruiting irrelevant because the chances of these guys who you sign out of high school really contributing anything substantive for you on the field 3-4 years down the line, it just feels so slim now to where you're almost just better off shopping from the group of five. Which nobody really wants to see, but I mean, that's sort of what it feels like. And so, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy what's going on. And the Nico thing has transcended college football. Like, we're talking about this story neck and neck with the way we're talking about with Rory McIlroy today. And he just accomplished the grand slam, first time in 25 years that's happened.
Right.
And yet it's Nico Amalaiava for an off the field story in college football that's dominating the talk shows.
So you know that fan base very well. You're part of that fan base. You wrote about the Vols for the Times Free Press. Were you surprised by the reaction of the fan base all on the side of the school, right? Even though I know that fan base well enough to know by next year, if they don't have the quarterback situated, they may revisit this. But it felt like almost resoundingly on the side of Josh Heupel and the school, and no one was really worried about Nico. I mean, maybe worried is the wrong word, but no one really seemed to bat an eye at the fact that Tennessee did not bend the knee and Nico Amalaiava's in the transfer portal. It's like they feel fine about that decision.
It's a fun thing to rally around in April. We'll see what it looks like in September when they got to take the field with somebody at quarterback, be that a redshirt freshman, a Jake Merklinger, who's never played any meaningful action, or some transfer who they're going to lure into the portal here over the next week. You know, we'll see. We'll see when they host Georgia on September the 13th, what the tenor is over how this played out. But in April, yeah, it feels great, doesn't it? It feels like you feel vindicated.
Nice rallying cry for the T, upholding the sanctity of the T.
Celebrating all the guys who want to be there for the love of the Vols and who grew up dreaming about running through that power T, you know. Unfortunately, we want it to be that, but it just isn't that anymore. And you know, there's just so few players who are going to be willing to take the hometown discount or stay for the love of State U. And you know, look, I think there's something to be said for player happiness here, and for maybe a player who's making $800,000, maybe they could make a million somewhere else, but they like where they're at, and that still happens. But by and large, pretty much everybody who's out there right now is viewing this as a business relationship, regardless of where they grew up or who they grew up cheering for. If you can make a life-changing amount of money to go to another school, you're going to do that. But yeah, no doubt. Tennessee did an excellent job of spinning this, of getting their side out. You're now seeing a lot of stories from behind the scenes that weren't known previously about how difficult it was to work with Nico and his family and his camp, and you know how he maybe wasn't the shining emblem of the program that a lot of people hoped he would be, right? You didn't hear any of that stuff 2 months ago. Now you're hearing it. Well, there's a reason for that. Tennessee wants to know that, wants their fans to know that they were justified in the way they approached this.
And Josh Pate pointed this out, and this will be the last thing on Nico, but he pointed out that he was hearing behind the scenes that Nico and his dad went to the negotiating table right before they played Ohio State in the college football playoff. That's, you know, I think the overwhelming thought of like expanding the playoff was we're not going to get opt outs. We're not going to see things like that. These games are too meaningful. But that made me when Josh Pate dropped that knowledge and other people sort of confirmed it behind the scenes, that made me rethink that entire thought process about people opting out of the college football playoff. If you have a contract dispute, it can trump all.
Yeah, but how ridiculous would you look as a player to quit
ridiculous,
on your team
for sure?
In December, when you got a national championship potentially ahead of you, I mean that's career suicide. You know, I'm sorry, that puts a red flag on a guy. I think in my mind, like looking at it from an NFL perspective, that I don't know if you can come back from that, regardless of how talented you are, unless you're a generational type, clear cut 1-1 type of guy. Like there's just no way.
Well, you have to have something. There has to be something going on behind the scenes where you're being done tremendously wrong. And then it could be a different conversation. But in a general sense, I know what you're saying.
Well, and in a sense where you've had your state attorney general get involved to literally remake the rules of NIL in favor of you, and then you're so, let's say it what it is, ungrateful, to the point where you're willing to throw a wrench in your team's college football playoff aspirations on the eve of the playoff to go and renegotiate. I mean, come on. There's a time and a place, and that was – certainly not it. So that's what I'm talking about, though, right? Like that narrative getting out there from behind the scenes from the Tennessee staff or whoever it is, kind of letting everybody know, hey, look, this is what we were dealing with here. So they've done a good job of deflecting the blame from themselves here and putting it on to Nico and his camp. And so masterclass in PR, right? Like,
yeah.
There's a reason why Josh Pate gets that intel, you know?
Sure. But I also, you know, Tennessee and a lot of universities have had a lot better, and we talked about this on Friday. They have a lot more practice at PR than you know, one guy, Nico Iamaleava, and the new agencies that represent them. You know what I mean? I think the agencies are going to have to take it upon themselves to get better at their PR behind the scenes.
Yeah.
This was a complete failure.
You got to hire Clutch, you know?
Yeah, right.
You got to hire Clutch and then do the sit down, LeBron style or whatever. Get your narrative out there. I'll be curious to see how Nico's camp sort of tries to do that moving forward. Is it a sit down with a Chris Lowe or something? He's kind of the go-to, right, for when you want to get some sympathy or your side of it out there. Like he writes from an empathetic standpoint, really gets into the emotional side of things a little bit with players in a way that most can't, right? Is he the guy? Shoot, Nico, call me up. I'd love to hear your side of this, right?
Like, but timing's everything with PR. That's one thing I do know. So, like, even if this is 2 months from now and he's committed elsewhere, you know, I think the time passing and not getting your story out still matters.
Yeah, right. Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Nico. I mean, there would have been at Tennessee this season, of course, like, no doubt. But, man, like, now you got to prove that you were right in the way you handled this, that you were worth $4 million, and that there were other programs out there bidding for your services. I'd be shocked.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday early access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skene strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If he gets $4 million at this point, he just doesn't have enough leverage, from what I can tell, to get that sort of figure. I think he'll be lucky to make what he was making at Tennessee, and then he's got to go out and perform on the field. I'll tell you, if he ends up at Tulane or North Carolina in a softer conference, I mean, maybe he has a great season.
Sure.
I mean, let's not discount the possibility there. This story is not over. The first chapter goes down as a win for Tennessee. Tennessee's feeling really good about itself today. But the ultimate victory of this story will be decided in September, October, and November on the field between the lines. And Nico still has a chance. He still has a chance to come out on top here.
Right.
He's behind, but he'll have a chance.
I mean, in the end of the day, if I look across college football, I still think you could make the case he's the most physically able, physically talented quarterback in college football. That doesn't mean that it led to great results last year, but he is 6'6", 225 pounds, cannon for an arm. He's got all the intangibles. He's got everything you need. It's just about where does he land, what does that look like. So we'll see how it all figures itself out.
Well, he's got the tools. He was a tick slow on the reads last year, and he was a bit inaccurate on the deep balls. He was Joe Milton 2.0, with a little bit more of a wiggle in his running ability, right? But yeah, a lot to prove.
Yep. Now you're never going to believe it. I have more transfer portal news to discuss with you, but this one's a little happier. Memphis lands a Memphis native. Julius Tedford is coming back to the University of Memphis. What can you tell me about Julius Tedford and sort of Penny adding him, 6'4", 190 pounds, a wing, a guard, to sort of add to, if P.J. Haggerty comes back, that backcourt?
Yeah, I know. It's a great pickup. It's I'm thinking relatively low dollar. Like, I'm sure he's going to make a nice penny at Memphis and a nice player, but not somebody who you're going to break the bank for, the type of guy that you need to build out a competitive roster. And he's got 3 years of eligibility left, which is the thing that sort of jumps out now. Will he stay for 3 years? I mean, who knows, right? But the possibility of what he could become is tantalizing. And when you get somebody who puts up quality numbers and good results as a freshman in college basketball, that's somebody worth pouncing on, because that's, you know, that's pretty rare. One, for a freshman to get on the court a fairly significant amount, and two, to perform well when they do. So, yeah, it's a great ad. There's so much Memphis talent out there in college basketball. I mean, I go through rosters all the time and I'm blown away.
Right.
Like, oh, I didn't even realize this guy was from Memphis. He played at Fairleigh or Whitehaven or wherever. I mean, they're all over the place. And so a lot of times, not just at Memphis, but places all over the country, guys are trying to get home for whatever the reason may be. You can make a little more money and go home. That's a win-win. So I think it's a good ad for Penny Hardaway. He's not an all-conference caliber player, but he's somebody who replaces like a P.J. Carter or certainly a Jared Harris and you know, and then some. So it's you know, the type of ads that you got to make that don't break the bank, that makes sense for both sides.
I know this can be corny to some people, but the hometown addition, especially at a place like Memphis, that matters. It restores the feeling of like some of the good times in Memphis basketball's history, to bring back guys from Memphis, to have guys on the roster that understand the city of Memphis and what this program means to the city. I know how corny that sounds, but I think it's particularly true in this city.
Well, in this day and age, when you feel like you don't know your team, it helps too. Oh yeah, that's the kid who played at Cordova, or what did he?
Right.
Did he finish at Whitehaven or Cordova? I can't remember. You know, but anyway, it's like, oh yeah, we remember that guy. He played AAU with, you know, so and so, right? So there's a little bit of that, which is nice. It adds some familiarity for sure. So yeah, a good player, man. I think he's a nice ad. Now, I think it's no news is good news, probably, on PJ Haggerty, right? Like that.
Yeah.
That's sort of my opinion. You're not seeing these negotiations spill out into the public. If they're happening, they're happening and they're buttoned up. And he's not in the portal yet, and that window is closing within the next 10 days or whatever, whenever it is. So it's that's a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's okay. Other teams can offer you $4 million. We can offer you $2.5 million and a hug. That's what we'll do. I mean, hopefully that's enough. Like, that's where I've been. If he gets in, I don't know if it's anything that Memphis could have controlled in the grand scheme of things. Because if he gets into the portal and goes elsewhere, that's a payday that Memphis was never going to be able to afford.
Yeah, and you kind of look at, like, Braden Smith from Purdue signaling today, hey, I'm coming back. Like, that's maybe not the best news, because what does that do? Other teams out there that were looking for a lead guard, well, maybe the price goes up for a lead guard who might still be out there now with Braden Smith off the market, right? So, like, you got to keep an eye on that type of stuff now. It's like, maybe if Braden Smith had gone into the portal, maybe P.J. Haggerty falls down the list a little bit of guys that are being sought after at that guard position.
Right.
So if you just keep an eye on stuff like that. Stuff like that matters right now, because the number of All-American caliber players out there who haven't made decisions yet is dwindling, right? And we haven't yet seen whatever that Instagram story or whatever it's going to be from P.J. Haggerty letting us know, like, what his decision is. It's still maybe pending, I suppose. And so, you know, those other stories out there with other players, they do matter.
No doubt. Well, David, I appreciate it, man. We will do it again on Wednesday.
Okay, sounds good, man.
Yes, sir. He's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. And he's brought to you by my good friends at Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store that's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. Get to their convenient location off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station before you get to 240. But you drive Poplar every day. Stop passing Oxbow and go in. 964 June Road is their address. Most unique retail experience in Memphis. They have the best men's casual clothing. Get in there. They have new shipments of Genteel, Howler Brothers, and Martin Dingman. Get a Genteel polo for your favorite team. They have Tigers, Grizzlies, SEC favorites, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, you name it, they have it over at 964 June Road at Oxbow. But it gets real unique from there. Not only do they have clothing, they have new and used vintage vinyl, if you like your vinyl selection. They have the best selection in the Mid-South of sports and entertainment memorabilia. They have, autograph posters, everything like that. They have card selection there for you, Major League Baseball trading cards. So if you are into that, get over to Oxbow. They have a great selection. On the top floor, they have hunting and outdoor essentials, perfect for the waterfowl hunter. They have cups, coolers, and koozies by Yeti. So it's never too early to start thinking about your tailgating season as we get closer to football season. in the fall. So make sure you take advantage of all of that over at Oxbow. And if you don't want to go in-store to 964 June Road, remember that you can shop online. ShopOxbow.com is where you find their site. That's ShopOxbeau.com. And when you fill up that shopping cart with whatever your heart desires, fill it up. Take your time. But when you go to checkout, use my promo code, TheGabeShow, all caps, no spaces, TheGabeShow. That is my promo code. And if you put that in, you get 20% off your online order at ShopOxbow.com. But whether you're going online or in-store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now, we're going to pick up right where we left off with David Cobb. Julius Tedford commits to the University of Memphis. And also, there was another commitment that from a name that we're pretty used to. We'll get to that next. And we've been waiting for some movement in the transfer portal for the University of Memphis and Penny Hardaway. Up until this weekend, it had only been Quante Berry, the transfer from Temple, that had committed to Penny Hardaway and the University of Memphis. But they got two commitments over the weekend. One, Ashton Hardaway reuniting with his dad after 1 year at St. Mary's. I don't know how much he's going to play. I don't know what that's going to look like. I think when he left the first time, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later in the Blitz, but when he left the first time, we talked about it. The fit with Penny Hardaway and his defensive scheme and Ashton Hardaway, maybe a little bit of a lack of athleticism. We always question that fit, but as a bench piece, a guy that can give you a few minutes a game, 10 to 15 minutes per game, he could potentially grow into himself. Third year in college basketball, he's played for Memphis, which is a decently high-level program, and then St. Mary's, who was a 5-seed last year. I think that he could fit in, and he definitely cares about winning. But I think today, bigger news, even bigger news. They were competing with a lot of other schools for this guy, but former Cordova and Whitehaven star Julius Tedford, guard, 6'4", 190 pounds, has committed to the University of Memphis after taking an official visit. He is headed home, and that was a big part of the reason and the sales pitch to get him to play for Penny Hardaway. He wanted to get back to the city. He knows the University of Memphis, grew up watching them, grew up liking them. But as a freshman for Western Kentucky, he was pretty impressive. He was pretty damn impressive. 12.4 points per game, 3.8 rebounds per game, 37% from three, off catch and shoot, so sort of the spot up catch and shoot threes, 39% from three. Definitely got a bump there, but he's a little bit bigger. He's certainly athletic, can get to the rack, plays really good hounding on ball defense. It definitely makes a whole lot of sense, and I like this as a potential backcourt mate or maybe potentially a guy off the bench to replace like that PJ Carter role. I like this for what Penny Hardaway is trying to build going into next season.
Yeah, I think it's a great pickup by the Memphis Tigers. It seems like he fits everything that Penny Hardaway wants. I like that he has outside shooting ability. He's got a lot of talent. When he was at Cordova, he led them to a 29-4 record his senior year. He averaged 21 points and 7 rebounds per game. He's a competitor, and I can't lie. I absolutely love that he's a Memphis kid. I think it is important for the Memphis Tigers to have Memphis players.
I know how corny it can be to be like, well, he knows the hometown school, and he loves the hometown school, and he plays for Memphis. He plays for the city, for the name on the front of his jersey. I know how corny all that can sound, but I think at a place like the University of Memphis, with the success they've had going into the past of getting guys from Memphis to stay home and having a lot of success at the hometown school, I think it really is important. I think it means something at the University of Memphis, as opposed to other schools around the country, to have that hometown flavor, to have fans latch on to these guys that they saw on the AAU circuit here, the guys that they saw play high school basketball here. It really does mean something, as corny as it can be to have that conversation.
Well, I think it's important because we've seen a few years ago when there were players that came in that didn't really have a connection to the city, it can go poorly. So having somebody that's going to be in that locker room that's from here that understands what the Memphis Tigers mean to the city, how important the Memphis Tigers are to the city, I think is important for the team moving forward. It's going to help with team chemistry. It's going to help make sure guys are bought in. I love that he is only a sophomore as well. Yeah. So he's somebody that's going to have a runway. We talk about that all the time. You want to try to bring in pieces that you think can be here for more than one season. And
it's
hard to retain them, and that's still a whole deal with NIL and transfer portal. I understand that there's no guarantee that they're going to be here for more than 1 year, but I do think that having somebody from the city of Memphis that seems to fit Penny Hardaway's system, because it sounds like he's a high IQ basketball player, a really good on-ball defender that can score at all three levels. He's a bit raw, but he's got all of the talent, and that seems like the type of player that Penny Hardaway does well with.
Yeah, but he's got 3 years of runway, to your point. Quante Berry has 2 years of runway. PJ Haggerty, if he returns, 2 more years of runway. Ashton Hardaway, 2 more years of runway. So you have guys where you could potentially create some continuity. Now, when you look at what they've recruited so far, they have the backcourt just about figured out. I'm not saying they have a bunch of roster spots, so they can fill it out how they see fit. There's still plenty of more players that they can be attached to in the backcourt that could help them going into next year. But if you count their backcourt right now and the members that we can assume are going to be on this team next year, PJ Haggerty, we'll get more on him in a second, and our sort of confidence level that he's going to be retained. But PJ Haggerty, Dante Harris, Quante Berry, and now Julius Tedford in that backcourt. I think you're not fully set. You could use another body, but you're about as set as you can be at this early juncture in the offseason. Now, what I want to see them tied more to is some size and some guys to potentially replace the production that Dane Danger is going to leave behind. And I don't see a whole bunch of that. But again, going back to the conversation we've continued to have, I feel like Penny.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Train to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Train to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is going to be able to figure it out. He's been filling out a roster this way for the better part of 3 years. I have no doubt that he can figure it out this year.
Yeah, it does seem like next up, you've got to figure out what you're doing at the big man position. But yeah, I have faith that Penny Hardaway and his staff will be able to fill that out. It's just I don't have a lot of faith that Dane Danger is going to be back in a Memphis Tigers uniform. The waiver and the University of Memphis has just never really worked out over the history of it. So I have my doubts about him being the answer for the big man position. But, yeah, I'm curious to see who they bring in.
Yeah, but I think you're pretty well figured out. If Dante Harris has to be your sort of on-ball guy to replace Tyrese Hunter, not the worst thing in the world. If you can find somebody better out on the open market, go for it. But as far as the backcourt is concerned, I think you have the pieces to be successful to pick up where you left off. Now, PJ Haggerty, where's your confidence level? Do we have any idea? Any new takes compared to what we've been talking about for the past, I don't know, 3 weeks, 2 weeks?
I mean, every day that goes by and
more
he's
confidence.
Not, and he's not in the transfer portal, I feel, I guess, 1% better about it. You know what I mean? I would have to expect that somebody like him would already be in the transfer portal if you were planning on leaving, or they're negotiating right now. I'm not sure. All I know is that I think that PJ Haggerty would be worth the money. I think that he is unbelievably important to the success of this team and what they could do next season. It seems like he likes the city. He fits Penny Hardaway's system perfectly. And I just hope to see him back in a Memphis Tigers uniform. And it's just the stressor of the NIL era and the transfer portal is that we have to have conversations like this. Your best player every single season, it's like, well, hopefully he's back next year, even though he's only a sophomore.
I just had this conversation with David Cobb. If by some, you know, if the situation unfolds where he ends up in the transfer portal and goes elsewhere, I got to be honest with you. I don't know if that's something you can hold against Penny Hardaway and the staff by any stretch of the imagination. He is already getting dollar figures thrown at him of $3 million and $4 million plus. And at the University of Memphis, you can offer that, sure, but it's most of your budget. And what's the rest of the team going to look like? I think the handshake deal or the agreement that would have to be put in front of PJ Haggerty that would keep him here is, again, and I know I'm kind of being facetious, a little tongue in cheek, but, you know, $2 million and a hug, $2 million and some love. That's what you can sell and a little bit of continuity, playing in the same system for another year. That's what you have to sell to P.J. Haggerty, because, again, you're just not going to keep up money-wise with the likes of, I mean, look at what BYU's been able to do. They spent $8 million on two recruits. Look at all of these schools around the country. They're spending on two or three pieces around $9 million. That's not what Memphis can do. That's their full budget, to be honest with you. So we'll see how it plays out. Still feel confident. Each day passing, like Connor said, I think you should feel more confident about it as well. Once that transfer portal closes, then you'll have your answer. But hopefully in the coming days, P.J. Haggerty can clear that up for us. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, and we're going to wrap up hour number two coming up next with Small Talk. Stick around. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, coming up tomorrow night, we're going to have the Grizzlies versus the Warriors in San Fran. We're going to have DeMichael Cole here in just a moment from the Commercial Appeal to talk about that and other things regarding the Grizzlies. But ESPN did a straw poll. ESPN used their 10 analysts to pick the winners of the play-in games and the winners of series so far. The results are in. The results are in. And according to ESPN and all of their wonderful analysts, 9 picks in on the Warriors and 1 pick for the Grizzlies. I want you to take a guess who at ESPN you think picked the Grizzlies.
Ramona Shelburne.
Oh, you have it.
I don't have it in front of me. I read it earlier.
Shout out to Ramona for at least a little bit of hope for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Tim McMahon didn't pick the Grizzlies? I cannot
believe it. Tim McMahon, Bobby Marks, Dave McMiniman, Jorge Sedano, Mark Spears, Jeremy Wu, and Ong Young Masuk all picked the Warriors to win that game tomorrow night. Only Ramona Shelburne. Tim McMahon, I don't think he should get any votes on anything that has to do with the Grizzlies.
I know. It's
based
the least
on his
shocking
past,
thing of all time.
To be honest with you. How do you feel about Tim McMahon and his reporting of the Grizzlies over the years? The John Morant story and everything else.
Poor.
Unfair? Does unfair, is that a word that comes to mind?
I would say that he searches for the quotes that match what he wants to write. He doesn't actually write, I think, what's actually going on. He comes into it with an idea already.
Which is not unlike a lot of
journalists. No, but when you're talking, when you're doing the whole, I interviewed business owners in Memphis.
Yeah, right.
And all of them somehow have something bad to say. Come on.
Get to other business owners. Yeah. Yes. You talk to business owners that wanted to tell your side of the story.
Like, I understand that before you write a story, it's your idea and you're trying to find things to match. But that one specifically, I'm like, oh, no, you came into this
also,
with a biased viewpoint. You tried to find the most negative quote.
I guess part of it, you do try to match up the narrative that you're trying to go into it with. But if someone provides you an alternate narrative, I feel like as a journalist, you do have the responsibility to put the other side of it out there.
Yes. Which he does not do.
He does not do. And that John Morant article, I still think, is one of the worst.
It was terrible.
The entire situation.
It was awful. The title of it, too, is insane.
And
insane.
Some just coded.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Coded language about rap music and everything. It was weird. That was one of the weirdest articles I've ever seen ESPN put front and center on their site, to be honest with you. I understand why they did it. John Morant was a big talking point at that time, but it was strange the way Tim McMahon wrote up that article. Also, speaking of the NBA playoffs, the Pistons are really trying to make sure New York Knicks fans do not infiltrate Little Caesars Arena. So what they have done, Pistons have restricted fans outside of Michigan from buying tickets for home games versus the Knicks. I like that. Let's get the old Pistons crowd in there. Knicks fans do have a way of traveling, though. I mean, you have a certain amount in every single city. And Knicks fans can travel relatively easily to Detroit. That's not that bad of a flight or travel. So I think the Pistons need to go about their business this way. That makes a whole lot of sense.
I'm so happy for the Pistons. What a great story. And that's why, like, the coverage of the NBA drives me insane, because the Pistons have been one of the best stories in the
league
all year.
Worst to protected playoff spot.
Yeah.
That means something.
They are the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. And yeah, the Eastern Conference, I understand if you did, top 16 teams, they wouldn't be the sixth seed, whatever. They are in the Eastern Conference, the sixth seed. They earned it. They went from the lottery to being one of the more exciting teams in the NBA. It's been a long time coming for them. They have literally had, in the last few seasons, some of the worst seasons Detroit Pistons have had in their history. And they have finally bounced back, made it to the playoffs. Cade Cunningham is finally getting the flowers that he deserves. They're one of the most exciting young teams in the NBA. You have Jaden Ivey, who has missed almost the entire season with that leg injury. There is a small chance that he may come back for the NBA playoffs. But just their future is very bright. I'm really happy for J.B. Bickerstaff. He's also getting the credit that I think that he has deserved for many years now. One of the best developmental coaches in the NBA. But all of that being said, you've barely heard about them on national coverage because we're talking about all this
stupid crap.
Shaquille O'Neal
thought that Chauncey
crap.
Billups coached him.
Of course he did.
There's that. The guy that is on the front and center show on TNT, one of the shows we hold the most dear, In NBA circles, he doesn't even know who the coach for the Pistons is, even though they're in a protected number 6 seed after winning how many games last year? How many games they win last year?
They didn't get to 17.
It was something ridiculous like that.
Speaking of Chauncey, though, shout out Chauncey Billups for the extension.
What do you think of that?
Good. They're playing hard. The Trailblazers had a really good end of their season.
They were really good defensively, too. That was the biggest thing.
I think he's a good coach. I think he's a really good basketball coach. That team was playing hard. They overperformed. They were not an easy win by any means this season for people, and they've got young talent.
They've got some interesting
Scoot, baby!
They've got some interesting, and Scoot started to play better. They've got some interesting pieces. Shaedon Sharpe, everybody sort of knows about at this point.
Yeah.
Very athletic. He started to come into his own at the end of the season, had a couple of 30-point games.
Kamara, I love Kamara.
I got to say, one of the more under-discussed guys in the NBA who is sort of on the precipice of taking another leap and getting into that star range, Denny Avdija is a baller.
You went crazy.
He's an absolute stud. And I don't think people talk about him enough. Don't think people are paying attention. But Chauncey, I think his winning percentage after the second half of the season was like around 55%, which I guess should give you an extension. But he's been there for a while.
I mean that team winning 36 games this year is kind of nuts.
Same amount of wins as the Phoenix Suns, who we'll talk about in a little bit. One coach did get fired for a 36-win team. That would be Mike Budenholzer, and, of course, Chauncey Billups keeps his job. But let's go ahead and grab a break. We'll come back and talk some Grizzlies with the Michael Cole from the Commercial Appeal on the other side.